Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo, the guy who hangs around this place, kind of like a vine or a, you know, wisteria or a mysteria or whatever. How are you doing? I hope you're doing well. Could things get any stranger? I'm not sure if they could. Maybe they could. I don't want them to get much stranger, you know. Strange is usually okay, but wow, I'm not sure if we could want it. Do we really? What? Strange. Strange. How strange could it get? Well, we're finding out just how strange things can be. And they can be pretty doggone strange. So today is the 17th of July of the year 2024. Mark this day on your calendar as a strange day. Strange days are coming. Jim Morrison wrote those lyrics, about 50 years ago or so. Maybe, I guess it was closer to 60 years or, 60, well, not quite 60, but 57 years. So, 57 years ago or so. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, was he right. Strange days. It's an awfully good album, by the way. If you haven't heard it, if you're too young to remember it, and you've never heard Strange Days by the Rolling... no, you don't, Mo. By the Doors, it's worth listening to. Of course, the Rolling Stones are good, too. A lot of good music from back then. But the Doors, one of my favorite groups. Yes, they are. So, how are you? How are you dealing with all this incredible weirdness that is going on around us? Are you coping? Are you moping? Or are you hoping? Now, don't take that too far. That's what I'd like to talk about today is hope. Rhymes with cope. And rhymes with dope, but that's a different story altogether. Hope. I have noticed that a lot of people are not hoping anymore. A lot of people have lost their sense of hope, and that really upsets me. That's one of the things that bothers me, is when people give up on their sense of hope. And I've noticed that a lot of people have. As a matter of fact, I've had that verbalized to me lately by someone who usually is pretty hopeful about things, but someone who has given up on their sense of hope. And that is a little frightening to me. And I don't think that it's, hopefully it's not a forever sort of thing, but you never know. You never know. Guess what I did yesterday? I turned on some bluegrass music. And yes, I know some of you are going, wait, is this the big one? Is this, what is that? Oh, here I come, Elizabeth. Here comes the big one. You know, that's from Sanford and Son, for those of you who don't know that. There's a piece of trivia. Red Fox would hold his chest and, here I come. I turned on some Hot Rise, which is really, truly one of my favorite bluegrass groups. If you're not familiar with Hot Rise, quite skilled in the art of old, good old-fashioned bluegrass. And then they would turn around and change outfits into country western sorts of uniforms. And then they'd be Red Knuckles and the Trailblazers. And their followers were called Knuckleheads, which I really liked. Boy, were they good. They were, I saw them accidentally here in the Colorado area at a free concert. And they were really fantastic. And their mandolin player, a redhead fella named Tim O'Brien, did the best rendition of the song Hey Joe I've ever heard, other than the original that I heard by Jimi Hendrix. Wow. Oh, Lord God, what's happening to me? Yeah, by Jimi Hendrix. Song was written by Billy Rose back in the earlier 60s. It's not a very nice song when you stop and think about it, but it's certainly a classic of the old rock and roll. Fever Tree did a version, and Love did a version, and just about everybody did a version of Hey Joe. It was certainly made into an iconic song by Jimi. As if, yeah, that's my buddy Jimi, by Jimi Hendrix. Did a remarkable version of it. If you've never heard Hey Joe by Jimi Hendrix, certainly worth your perusal. Unbelievable. And it's not a nice song, frankly. It's supposed to take on an old Western sound. And in fact, it was written in 61 or 63, something like that. And it's a blues song, theoretically. And I think his name was Billy Rose, but Tim O'Brien does a kind of a corncakey bluegrass version of it that just is amazing. On YouTube, you can see that. He does it at a Scottish folk festival. It's just unbelievable. Love it. And my wife just hates that it's one of my favorite songs. But, you know, when it came out in the beginning, it was Jimi, man. And boy, did he play it. Whoa! And he's got these female background vocalists who are just remarkable. The song is just, you know. And maybe you had to be in the time. I don't know. And Love does a pretty good version of it. And Fever Tree does a pretty good version of it, you know. But there's only... And then, you know, there's only one Jimi. And then Tim O'Brien comes out. Anyway, I'm an old man. We just wax philosophically. I've been thinking a lot lately about some amazing things that have been going on in the world. Amazing things. And how crazy the world is right now. But, you know, it's been crazy for a long, long time. This is all nothing new but hope. See, I'm a man who hopes a lot, and I've had many of my hopes fulfilled. Hopes for the world, and then sometimes hopes get dashed to pieces. They get kind of crashed, and some of them burned. But for the most part, a lot of the hopes that I've had, well, some of the hopes that I've had have not made it. Yeah, I've hoped for world peace. Just hasn't come about. Just hasn't happened. It hasn't come about. It just doesn't seem to be destined for my lifetime, but I still hope for it, and I'm not going to stop hoping for it. I believe that there is a part of humanity that, a large part of humanity that would really like peace to be the standard. I hope that that's the case. I would love for that to be the case. But there's always going to be a faction of very wealthy, powerful people who just don't let that happen. People with vengeance in their eyes. People with vengeance on their mind. But let's talk about hope some more. Well, for those of you listening in the future, on the 13th of July, last Saturday, as I'm speaking these words, someone attempted to assassinate Donald J. Trump, former president of the United States of America. And thank goodness, some people don't feel that way, but they only nicked his ear. And I can't imagine that felt very good. However, had they really gotten him, had they in fact been able to actually take him down, I can't begin to imagine the chaos that would have begun at that point. Now, a lot of people are saying, yeah, well, maybe it would have been just fine. But I don't think it would have turned out as brilliantly as some people think. Because it's really hard to to say, well, so this faction did not do it, and that faction did not do it, and no, this person didn't put the wheels in motion, and so on and so forth. There's always going to be someone who's going to believe that this person did it and that person did it. That's just the way it is. There will be people who are always going to buy into conspiracy theories. And I've been really thinking a lot about conspiracy theories. And I've come up with some ideas as to why these conspiratorial thinking people think the way they do. I've been in a group mentality before. I've been a member of organizations before. And there is a tendency to be like a school of fish. You've seen schools of fish on documentaries. Maybe you've seen them in the wild. And you've seen how they suddenly turn together. It's like they share a certain brain. I have some theories that I've worked on as to why these things happen, why people think the way they do, why groups come to take on ideas the way they do. That shared brain capacity. You know, I used to teach a class in seeing auras. I do believe in auras. I do believe that they can be seen. I see them, but yeah, I have to put my mind to it. You have to want to see auras to see auras. I believe we can all see auras anytime we want to see them. The circumstances have to be right the first time you see them. The surroundings have to be better suited to them. But once you've seen auras, pretty much you can see them anytime you want. Now, that's not always true for someone who hasn't seen them a few times or someone who hasn't set the lighting in a room the right way. Because we kind of freak out and we can't see them after that. But I've been looking at them for a long time. And you can see them too. If you want to see auras, all you have to do is look for them. Now, I used to teach a class. Now, the reason I can see them is because I took a class in it back when I was about 22, I think, right around there. And it was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And there were two or three people who could see them very, very well. And I was a skeptic, I have to admit it. And I had never seen them before. I didn't think I had. I actually had, and I didn't know it. So I was sitting there and kind of in the back of the room, and two of the people who could see them quite well were standing in the back. And they were looking at people who stood up in the front of the room, and it was darkened, and they were standing up in front, and they were discussing what they were seeing. You know, I see this, and I see that. They were seeing geometric shapes and whatever. And I was looking up there, and suddenly I was seeing something, and I said, oh, I kind of see this, and I kind of see it. And I was seeing a shape, and I saw kind of a color to it, and I saw it. And then the person in back of me who could see it was saying, and I see this, and I see that. And I was going, great honk, I'm seeing that too. But I had seen it before they said they saw it. And then another person went up there, and I saw these shapes, and I saw the colors, and they were changing, and I saw them changing, and I saw them doing this before the person in back who could see them saw it. And suddenly I was seeing auras, and I was seeing them in such a way that the people in back were seeing them, and I was blowing my mind. And other people in the class started to see it too, and I was as excited as I had ever been in my life. And that's what I called the crack in the wall. The crack in the wall. My life changed forever that night. I had never been that excited about much of anything as I was in that moment because the crack in the wall. Now, let me explain the crack in the wall. My first year in college, my family had moved to California. We lived in Palo Alto on Stanford campus because my dad was teaching or doing a sabbatical at Stanford. He wasn't teaching, but he was doing a sabbatical in Stanford Hospital there. And then he'd do a day a week in Berkeley. And it was great. It was a great year. I didn't go to Stanford. I went to Los Altos Junior College, which was one of the best educations I ever got. It was a wonderful year for all of us. I never saw my mom so happy in my life. And so we were there, and I had a friend. I met a friend in my psychology class that I took there. And his name was Mike, God rest his soul. He was a great guy. I really liked Mike. And he was also a heck of a doper. And I was a doper. And so after class, he'd say, "You want to ride home?" And I'd say, he'd been in the service. He was in the Navy. And he had a friend who was a Navy SEAL. My God, I could tell you stories just about Mike and his friend, the Navy SEAL. But I won't get into that today. My God, I have some stories about Mike. I could tell you stories about that 1 year. Oh, my goodness. Oh, man. Chinatown. And oof, what a people I met. About Mick, who was going to be he was quite a character, that guy. He was going to be a chiropractor, and he did energy work. Oh, man, the people I met. And anyway, so here we are. We went to his house, and he was living in his in-laws' houses. They were across the sea, and his wife was really nice, but Mike, he smoked a lot of weed. And so consequently, I ended up smoking a lot of weed. And he was older than I was by a few years. And I was just right out of high school. So we'd sit, and he had this great little pipe. And I'm telling you this story for a reason. So we're sitting there, and he had these huge Bose speakers. Now, at the time, Bose speakers were the epitome of sound. And he would play like Foghat and Quicksilver Messenger Service and the Grateful Dead, you know. And we would sit there and listen to this music really loud. And I mean really, really, really loud. And or loudly, if we want to speak the proper way. And one day we're sitting there, and we're both just, you know, pretty wiped out. And the music is really loud. And suddenly, staring straight ahead as we did, the wall cracked in his in-law's house. It just goes, and it occurred to me that we were looking at the wall, and it goes crack because of the bass. And I realized, man, this music is too loud. And it changed me in that moment forever. I realized someday I'm probably going to need hearing aids. Ding! Which I now wear, you know. But that there was something wrong with that lifestyle. And it changed me. I actually, from then on, when he'd say, "Hey, you want to ride home?" And I'd say, "Yeah, but," you know, "but." And it kind of changed our relationship a little bit, because I realized it probably wasn't the healthiest thing to do. And my grades were beginning to slip, you know. And that's just a truthful story. That was the 70s, the early 70s, man. That's the way they were. And, you know, no surprise, he and his first wife did not make it. I was really happy to see that he got married again. I was not happy to see it in his obituary, but he did get married again, and he had kids, and he had a wedding and for his daughter, and he lived pretty happily, as a matter of fact. And he rose to, he rose in a company, and he was well-loved. He was loved by the people below him, so I guess he got his world together a little bit. But he was a sweet guy. He was a really, really sweet guy. And it was the first guy I knew had a really strong Chicago accent. So you meet people in life. You meet people. But that's when I say that there was the crack in the wall, it changes you. Something that happens so drastically that it changes you. And that night I saw auras. It absolutely changed me. You know, that crack in the wall. So I used to teach a class in auras. And I taught it at the old 12th House bookstore. And when I taught that class in auras, if one person could see him, which was me, everybody could see him. Every person in that class saw auras. Now, not everyone saw them again. But I told people, I said, "You've got to believe. You've got to hope that you can see him." And so everyone could see him. And that's kind of how that mentality works. People can really spread that energy. So if one person has a belief system that is not necessarily healthy, well, that person can spread it. So if I can see auras, you can see auras. And other people can see auras just because that belief is strong. So the same is true of conspiracy theories. The same is true of a smile. If you walk in and you smile at someone, they're going to smile and they're going to feel better and they don't even know why. But they can spread that throughout an entire grocery store. Well, yesterday when I went to the grocery store, it didn't feel good. Just didn't feel good. Now maybe a little tea here. A little peach turmeric ginger tea, which is delicious stuff. Delicious stuff. Now maybe you have felt this. You know, Saturday evenings or Saturday afternoons events were really pretty heavy duty. Now it's a major event. And it is really messing with the psyche of people. Now, you might not feel it, but you've got to feel the tensions. You've got to feel the tensions, and it's got to be affecting the emotions of everybody at some form or another, in one way or another. Now, most people are kind of underplaying it. Most people are kind of saying, I don't want to feel this. I don't like the way this feels. After what happened with the first debate, people are saying, oh, my God, I don't like the way this feels. I don't want to feel this. I don't. But you and I are human beings, and human beings are very, very sensitive to energy. We are feeling energy. And we gotta face up that energy is something that affects everybody. I'm pretty sensitive to energy. When I first started doing this stuff back in my 20s, late 20s, I suppose, because I was doing readings from a very early time. But when I first kind of said, okay, I'm going to put out a shingle, and people said, Mo, would you do some energy work? And I did some energy work, and it was very good, and it was very powerful, but it exhausted me, and I didn't like it. I said, man, I don't like taking people's emotions and kind of taking them on. I didn't like that part of it. It took me a while to figure out that I could do energy work, but that it wasn't really my thing, not my gig, you know? So I kind of did, because the thing I thought I was really good at was doing the readings. We'll see, you know. I almost retired completely because of the vertigo I was dealing with and some other things, you know? So I kind of pushed some things away, you know? But tensions. I feel them. I feel them all the time. I'm sure you do too. Some of you are probably empaths. You can feel that sort of thing right off the bat. You can say, well, I don't like the way this feels. I don't want to feel this. I don't like the way this feels. I don't think I should feel this. So most people are trying to underplay the amount of stress that our society is under right now. It's an amazing amount of stress. Some people are all in on one side or the other. Most people are kind of saying, do I really have to make, does this have to be the way things are? I'm not liking this anymore. You know, that sort of thing. Now, I have hope. And I have hope for a particular outcome. And whether it happens or not, I still have hope that everything's going to work out all right. Because I believe in the concept of optimism. I'm an optimistic person. You know, everything works out. Now, most people, like I said, are kind of underplaying things. Not everyone. There's some people who are like Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. It's like, yeah, well, all right. I guess if I have to do the, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm not like that. I'm not like that. I kind of look at it and say, you know, it's going to be okay. It's going to work out okay. For you and me, on the level we are in, unless someone in the West Wing is listening to me, in which case, man, give me a call. Let's talk. You know, you've got the ability to find out my number and call me, and we'll talk for a while. And not that I can help that much, but I can at least alleviate some, you know, worries you might have, and just say, man, it's going to be okay. But most people are kind of ignoring things and underplaying the importance of what is going on right now. The importance is huge. But that doesn't mean we have to sit around and let it eat at our innards. We don't have to allow that to open, and we shouldn't allow that to happen. We just have to face it and say, okay, this is a big deal. I wrote in the Power Peak that I'm kind of enjoying this time. Well, obviously what happened Saturday, I had written that article before what happened. I knew stuff was coming. We all know something weird is happening and that this is a very strange time. You know, Dorothy said it best. Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in Kansas. We're not in New Mexico. You know, we're not in Siam. We're not anywhere that is normal anymore. This is the Twilight Zone. And even that isn't as normal as, you know, that was normal compared to what we're doing now. This is untested territory. This is the strangest, weirdest time that I can ever remember. And I've got a relatively good memory. Oh, yeah, I'm getting old. And some of the pistons aren't firing exactly the way it should be firing. But the spark plugs are a little bit dirty, and I'll clean them up, you know. Well, that's, oh, I love mixing metaphors, you know. It's better than a good cocktail. But the whole point is, and I'm not even sure that was a mixed metaphor, but the whole thing is that this is a time for us to pay attention and to realize that we can't afford to lose hope. It just is not something that we can do, nor should we do, right? The only people who aren't really, you know, dropping the ball on the old paying attention to this, of course, is the media. And that's because they want you to watch, and they're going to hype until it really doesn't pay anymore. And then they're going to go to something else. The whole story about Saturday's attempt is kind of losing some traction. So they're going to kind of drop it for a while until they can find another ankle. Well, they are ankle biters, that's for sure, until they can find another angle, and then they'll come at it, you know, full tilt boogie. But, you know, the truth is that they'll find another way to go at it, you know. And they'll find someone else to blame. And I mean, there's enough blame to go around, and that is someone in that crowd lost his life, and two other people were seriously injured, critically injured. How horrible is that? You know, and frankly, there is no room for violence in politics, I don't think. Back in the 60s, there was a lot of talk about that. A lot of talk. And I was in the fourth grade when JFK was assassinated. And that was just heartbreaking for an entire nation, for the entire world, because he was about hope. Now, it is my opinion that is why an entire generation, namely mine, we so-called baby boomers, that's why we are so freaked out. That's why we're so weird. That's one reason why we absolutely glommed onto conspiracy theories. That's why we're so messed up. Because, well, there's so much. Maybe I'll write about that aspect in the Power Peak this week. Because one of the things that we heard, and I swear to you this is the truth, on the playground when we first started hearing about President Kennedy being assassinated, someone said something about someone shooting from a grassy knoll. And I'm not kidding you. I heard that on the playground that day, not long after we heard that he had been shot, before they called us in. And it's like, what? How is that even possible? Well, that's just the way it goes. I was 9 years old at the time. 9 years old. And if that didn't infect our brain, what else couldn't or could? And watching Lee Harvey Oswald on live television being shot by Jack Ruby and all that other stuff that came up. And it's like, what is going on here? What sort of world is this? Why wouldn't we believe in conspiracy theories? And Dr. Cyril Weck, the famous forensics doctor, forensic doctor, and It's like, oh my God, all the things that came out, and Oliver Stone's movie, JFK, and I mean, you know, we're just bombarded with this stuff. No wonder we're so nuts as a generation. And the people below who look to us for some sort of wisdom, man, whew. And we didn't trust our parents' generation, especially after the Red Scare, because they were paranoid. You know, so much of it. So we have to get back to the idea of hope. Where does hope come from? Well, first of all, let's talk about the influence of what happened Saturday. Well, I live in the Denver metro area, Denver, Colorado. Monday and Tuesday, I don't know about today, but Monday and Tuesday, there was a heck of a lot of road rage around here. A major amount of road rage around here. Lots of it. It's like, wow. Much more so than usual. And you're going to have it anywhere in a metro area where you have people driving 80 miles an hour, you know, through the city, which is what they do. I went to the grocery store yesterday. Had to. And, man, I saw it in a parking lot. And I was getting ready to pull out. I had to pick up a couple things very quickly because we have our puppy. And I'm the guy who takes the puppy out, you know, which is always a privilege for me. I love, you know, well, it's a joy, isn't it? Isn't it a joy to serve other people when you can, to help them? And a puppy, for sure. I mean, and my dog. I mean, I'm always proud to say that I've been present for almost every time my dogs have used the facilities in their lifetime. I find that to be a lovely thing. I know that sounds weird, but I think you know what I mean. I hope you do. So I had run to the store, and I got in my car, and I hear someone yelling, or I heard a horn honk, and then this guy started yelling, and he starts screaming, and he gets out of his car, and he calls this lady a terrible name, and he just starts screaming at her, and she doesn't say anything because she's terrified, and he just yelling, gets in his car and says, go ahead and get ready to wait, because I'm not moving. Now, in the meantime, I need to get home. Guy next to me needs to get home, and this guy won't move. So he's very uptight. In the store, people had faces like robots, not happy robots either. And I realized that I could see the way people driving, people are erratic. Something's wrong. Something's very wrong. Well, I think it has to do with what happened, or maybe what's happened since the debate, and then what happened Saturday. People are afraid, people are nervous, and people are just weirded out, man. They're just weirded out by everything. There is no hope for many people. People are just completely and totally wigged. They're just wigged out, is a term that I'm sure there are words in the new vernacular that I just simply don't know. But people are not in a good place. And the point of that is to say that we have to keep our hopes up. We have to keep our sense of potential and possibility. We can't afford to lose hope. But we do it so quickly nowadays. Why do we do that? Have you lost hope? You should ask yourself that question. I'm amazed at the people who have really said, it's over. It's over. You know, done. There is no hope. And that really puzzles me. How can it be over? There are a lot of moments between now and then. There are a lot of possibilities of things that can happen. There are a lot of ways that things can bend in the space-time continuum, that can bend toward a different outcome. It's simply a matter of will, of your will, of my will, of the will of every person you know. It just needs to go your way. And it can't do that if you don't have any hope. It won't do that if you don't have any sense of hope. Do you agree? See, if you don't, then there may be a problem. It's vital that you put energy into that particular wall. What wall? Well, you know what I mean. Do you? I don't know what I mean. It's important to stay at it. It's important to stay focused on what it is important to do. Hope is a matter of personal strength, of saying I can do something, because you can do something. It doesn't mean you have to hit the bricks. It doesn't mean that you have to, you know, get a cheerleading outfit on and, you know, get a megaphone. Although megaphones are fun to play with. I've played with one. How do you regain your hope once you've lost it? If you remember Paradise Lost, once Adam and Eve, you know, lost paradise, they were banned. They couldn't go back. Remember, the Archangel Michael stood in front of the gates of Eden with a flaming sword. Said, tough noogies, you guys are out. You're gone. That's it. Now I have to stand here forever with a flaming sword. Can't come back in. That's not how hope is. No one stands in front of your hopes with a flaming sword. You get to go back in. But what you do is you absolutely choose. Choose. Man, I just had an image. Isn't that funny? I just had an image, this vision, if you will, of instead of a gate of the flaming sword of this entity standing holding a handful of hazelnuts, you know. In the old Celtic lore, hazelnuts were symbols of wisdom. Hazelnuts, symbols of wisdom. And the hazelnuts would be, they were symbols. There was a warrior named Bran, B-R-A-N. He made great muffins, by the way. These were great muffins. He ate a hazelnut out of a well where a trout was in it. And the hazelnut fell into the well. And I'm kind of paraphrasing the story, but he ate one of those hazelnuts and he was incredibly wise. And he died in battle. And his head went on to give prophecies forever after, and they kept his head. And it's just kind of an interesting story, because that story is also found in Africa, where a chief, his head was kept in a tent, and the head would tell stories and give prophecies. And their story is also told at Delphi. It's amazing, these stories about these heads, magical heads that keep talking and keep talking and keep talking. The same was true of the head of the Gorgon, Medusa. These wonderful stories of these talking heads that are filled with wisdom, you know. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? These paradigms, these incredible paradigms that host wisdom that we can't even really begin to completely fathom yet. The head of Osiris, the same sort of thing. His head that was found after he was killed, that could sometimes prophesy. Amazing. I get lost in my thoughts. I'm sorry. There's so much. There's so many threads that connect humanity from the very beginning to where we are now. These threads of commonality in the stories, in the myths. And they're beautiful. They're strange. They're really, really strange. But there is something quite fascinating about them. You know? The power of myth. The power of myth to expose the story. And then to give us, for example, there are so many incredible stories. I'm not going to get into that. I'm getting far afield. But that's what gives me hope. These tales, they bring us back to the idea of the beauty of humanity. And we've lasted this long. So even in a time when we seem to be so lost, even in a time when we seem to be without any real power. Do you ever wonder if, let's say, you're on one side of the fence and other people on the other side? How can so many people be wrong? And you think, well, wait a minute, is it me? Because the people who believe the other side, they really, really believe in that other side. And it's that they really, truly have that view. That view of everything you don't believe in is right. What is right? Well, what is morally correct? And what is ethically wrong? I think I know. How do we regain hope in a world that seems to be corrupt? How do we regain hope when the system seems to be absolutely stunted and broken? How do we get back? What do we do? Do we look beyond the unimaginable lack of conscience? Do we look at people and say, how can they allow this egregious, ridiculous sense of repugnant, nauseating ick go on? How do we let that happen? How? So what do we do? Do we say, how do they you know, raise their happy faces in the air, you know? How do they, funny words are just difficult to even put to this. How do they smile and grin and yippity yahoo it? Bring it home to meet their families, you know? And all we can say is, they believe. They believe. Somewhere along the line, the system is not what we believe. They believe in something quite I don't know what the word would be. Something different. Or it's that if one person can see an aura, they all believe in auras. And so what we have to do is have hope that everything will work out all right in the long run. that something is afoot, that something is happening that's supposed to happen for our society, that we're changing, we're evolving, that maybe this has to happen in order for our version of what we are to evolve. That's it. To change a little bit. Maybe. I believe fully that the summer of love, 66, 67, 68, was different. But it had to happen. It was there. It had to be disappointing in the long run. Just had to be. And it was. But it had to happen in order for the world to awaken to a new paradigm of peace and love. Even though none of it was really achieved, it had to know that such a thing was possible. Maybe what we're facing now is the reality of the opposite of all that. That gives me hope. We are facing an ugly truth. We're seeing a world where there is a rejection of certain freedoms, a rejection of humanity, a rejection of peace, a rejection of love, a rejection of the basic principles of human rights, a rejection of decency. And I think that this will bring about a sense of, well, anger, a sense of frustration, a renaissance of the peace and love movement has got to come from it. Not just the hippie movement, because the hippie movement was more than it's painted to be. Because when I say we believed in peace and love, I mean we believed in it. It wasn't just what you see on TV with the, hey, man, you know, that sort of thing. You know, it wasn't just that. It was a fervent hope within every one of us that the world would be a better place. It was a desire to change the world within every single one of us. I mean, I've been this weird my whole life, even before the big changes. But I've been weird. I was one who has always had the feeling of being on the outside of society looking in. I've never felt, and that hasn't bothered, well, it did bother me, I suppose, in the beginning, but I've never really felt that bad. I mean, I've never been normal. Maybe you feel the same way. So when things seem to be really bad and they get weird, I kind of feel more hopeful. I feel like this is what we've been waiting for. A time when change is absolutely pressed upon us, because this is a time when it has to break through. Something has to happen. You know, you've heard the word squares, man. You know, that guy's a real square. Or, man, look at the edges on that person. We used to say things like that, and it was meant to be a little derogatory, but it was more of a warning. You know, real L7. It just meant, be careful, because the people that were square when I was young are square today. And I've always been weird. I've always been a freak. I've always let my freak flag fly. Why? Not as some sort of, you know, I'm eccentric, ha ha ha, but because I haven't had any choice, because I am who I am. Like my old pal Popeye used to say, I am who I am. That's it. We are who we are. We don't want to intrude upon other people's lives, but we want to share the good within ours. We want to share a better version of the world. We want to help people to live happier lives. I don't want to intrude on people, but if I can help a smile to come through, if I can live a better life and have other people see the aura, if I can help them see the crack in the wall, if I can change someone's life in an easy way and make them realize that their life has changed forever in a split second, then why wouldn't I want to do that? And it doesn't take something huge, but it takes a moment when you realize that the world is not what you think it is. And a lot of people in our society felt that last Saturday. They went, wait a minute, and a lot of people lost hope. And if you lose hope too, then what's going to happen? Don't lose hope, friends. There's nothing to lose hope for. Man, this is our world. We are the rays of light. We're not the sun. The sun is the sun, but we carry the beams of light that can bring warmth to other people. We're children. We have to laugh. We have to smile. I've just been through one of the biggest griefs that I've had in a long, long time, losing Trudy. She was an absolute light and joy in my existence. Every single day, that little pup, that little girl, 8 years old, left. You know? Broke our hearts. And I'm still grieving, but we have a new puppy, and she is a joy. Oh, man. She's a love. And I'm never going to over Trudy, but you're not supposed to get over it. But we've got a lot of love in us, don't we? A lot of love. A lot of love. And I couldn't put her through that pain. I couldn't do it. She didn't suffer long. She had pain for about a day, not even a whole day. It was a blessing, you know, that she didn't have to suffer very long. And so, yes, even in the midst of that, I can see the good side of it. God Almighty, I love her. And I love our new dog, too. And it's not easy with a puppy, but it's beautiful with a puppy. And it'll be wonderful. And nothing is sure in this world. Nothing. So we have to hope it's going to be wonderful and hope that the world will be beautiful. And we want to hope that things work out the way we want them to. But if they don't, we want to make the best of it that we can. So friends, come on, man. We are a tribe. We are a tribe of beautiful people doing beautiful things with beautiful beliefs in our lives. Let's keep it that way. Smiles, man. Upbeat. Let's be who we are. Let's let our freak flags fly, okay? I really think this thing is going to work out. We're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. I mean it. I absolutely mean it, all right? Just hang in there with me. Don't lose hope. Peace and love. It'll happen. I hope it happens in my lifetime, but if it doesn't, in my grandchildren's lifetime. My granddaughter, who is a pediatric nurse, is an amazing human being. She's an amazing human being. The blood that runs through her veins is incredible. There's a drop of mine in there. I wish I could take credit for one millionth of the stuff she does. I can't, but I'm so proud to know that a little bit of me is in her, because she is a million times better than anything I've ever done. That's hope. That's hope for the future. All right, enough of me. I hope you have a beautiful week, a lovely week. Until next week, peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rock,